Lucy, I'm home.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. And today's episode is Lucy Thinks Ricky Is Trying to Murder Her, which is a pretty strong word, if you ask me.
Yes, murder her. We've talked about this a few times. And I'm really excited because we get to talk about it. But yes, just that title in general is like, whoo, all right. This is a big one.
Yeah, it's not harm. It's not hurt. It's murder.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the synopsis, ready? Mm-hmm. Lucy, an avid whodunit story reader, is enraptured by the Mockingbird murder mystery. The next day, Lucy's already over-imaginative suspicions are heightened when she overhears Ricky talking about getting rid of her girl singer, and she thinks he wants to get rid of her.
Right.
Ricky thinks Lucy's losing her sanity, slips her sleeping powder, but before she falls asleep, Lucy and Ethel rush down to the club to confront Ricky.
Very dramatic. The whole thing is, yep. I have so many questions just from that synopsis alone because, yeah, we'll get into it, but I have so many questions. So this is directed by Mark Daniels and written by Jess Oppenheimer, Madeline Davis, and Bob Carroll Jr., which is the trio that we're all used to writing these episodes. And I think you had mentioned earlier that this was the first one filmed.
Oh, yes. This was the first episode actually shot. And then they decided that the girls want to go to a nightclub was funnier, which... Yes, I mean, to an extent, I don't know. I feel like if they had opened with this, they might have had a harder time, I don't know, getting it off the ground. Like,
you mean just like it's the a concept? Pretty dark,
it's a pretty dark episode, you know? And so to open with that, like, hey, this is the first time you ever see these characters, and let's, you know, have the husband, not only the Latino husband, you know, trying to murder the all-American white woman.
I didn't even think about that. Oh my God, that's so true. I didn't even think about that because you're right. Can you imagine the first image you have is of the Cuban man chasing after the redheaded wife, and he's not just trying to harm her, he's trying to kill her in his mind. It's just, yeah, it's really weird. But so it was the first one filmed, but not the first one aired. It was now number four. Episode number four.
Correct.
In season one. And then later on in season two, it's reused as a flashback because she was having her baby, Lucille was. So that's so neat.
It's also important to note two things. One, you did mention she was having her baby. So she's pregnant in this one. And that's why she's always in that house coat, I think. And then, you know, the pan over her stomach and things like that.
That would make sense.
And also, this is the first and only episode to be shot with four cameras because Ricky was worried that they would get, you know, the audience would get bored. Mm-hmm. And so he always had four going so that way one of them could be switching out the camera, the film while the other three still shot. And after that, they went back down to the three cameras and then the orchestra just kept them, you know, entertained it while they were switching.
And while
film,
Lucille was pregnant during this time, which would explain the robes, but because they had the four camera system and they wanted to kind of do it in one take and do the play scenario, she had layers of clothing on so she could just remove it because there were no breaks between, you know, between the scenes. So that must have gotten really hot with the studio lights and the clothes, and she's pregnant and her husband's trying to kill her. I mean, there's a lot going
I
on.
I know. Oh, my goodness. I do want to read this little excerpt. It's from the Lucy book. It's a complete guide to her five decades on television. And this is just about this episode. And it says that the entire first episode actually shot. We said that. And it actually brings up a lot of important character elements. So I kind of wanted to read this because it is interesting. Mm-hmm. So Lucy's conniving mind is explained by an outgrowth for love for mystery novels. Ricky's opening dialogue tells the audience what he does for a living, where he does it, which is the Tropicana. And I do want to point out that this is not part of the excerpt, but I think it's really interesting that He says he was renewed. So like this was on a week or every 4 weeks.
Every 4 weeks,
they had to do it for which is, you know, you don't think about that a lot, but
that's a stressful way to earn a living.
Would be stressful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then that his orchestras held over at the club indefinitely after a point. Fred's line, "Crazy for Lucy or crazy for ordinary people," sets up the premise that everyone kind of thinks Lucy's a little wacky. And then in addition to all of this, the idea that Mertz's are the Ricardos' landlords and best friends is fully established. The actors are still adjusting the characters. The only role that seems solidified from the first word is Fred Mertz. The other three search and stretch over a period of weeks before the on-camera personalities are fully developed. So, and that's where you get that quote. There's a quote from Lucille Ball where she says, you know, Bill Frawley was Fred Mertz, period.
Oh yeah, definitely. So, definitely.
She didn't have to do a whole lot of searching for that character. He just was, you know.
Just was. Yeah. You're right. And in that in that poster that you mentioned where it says that he was held over for 4 weeks, you know, four additional weeks, it also has a typo with Ricardo, a double C, which is, you know, you kind of have to have the eye to see
that. I love that goof.
And you see that the beds are also together.
And I think that all comes back to the idea that, you know, you're not supposed to see them sleeping in the same bed on camera together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the way they got around that. But I could be wrong. I think that at that time, that was kind of their way to get around that. I do have to say the idea of having my own sheets is pretty nice.
Your own what?
That no one can steal, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That
my
is
my own sheets.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, blankets, things like that. Don't steal my stuff.
Right.
That's, I don't have to fight anyone for it. It's my own stuff.
Although when you think about the way you have to make the beds in the morning when you have two beds close together like that, that's kind of a headache, you know, because when you have them separate, then that makes it easier. But they had them two like individual beds. I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking this, but just like a lot
pushed together.
Yeah. So they
no, I feel like that'd be a lot of work and she'd have to do it, of course.
Yeah. No, of course, because 1950s. So they so it opens up like you you mentioned with her reading the Mockingbird murder mystery, which is unusual to see the book cover. Because it's the word Mockingbird is cut in two, which is unusual for a book title to be cut up that way. And so it's just to make a point so the audience can see.
They had to do it so that they could, the audience could see it.
Yeah. So make it like a big bold print. And she's dipping her crackers, you know, in her cheese dip or whatever type of dip she's got going, sour cream or something. And of course, she's
old,
got
old cheddar cheese. I stopped it.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Old cheddar cheese?
It was old cheddar cheese.
Old?
I was like, ew.
Why? Old.
What? Old. Yeah. I don't know. But I don't know. I have to think that they probably just put the same thing in both and then just put on, slapped on different labels.
Well, yeah,
you know?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine she's actually dipping into cold cream.
Definitely if she's pregnant. Before we get too far into it, I know we've mentioned this before, but the plot from this show is partly based on The Wills, episode 80, from My Favorite Husband.
Yes, that's right. Because most of these are...
The name of the episode is The Wills.
Right. Most of these are based off of My Favorite Husband. So this one was from The Wills.
Yeah. And actually, The Wills is used twice because it's similar to the plot of the Lost pilot. So they have overlap from The Wills in two different episodes.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that.
We hear the first real laugh. Ricky actually gets the first real laugh of the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And they, now is this from, what is it that he quotes? Because he does say something.
He says that he took so many bows that.
That's right.
Oh, man. What was it? I forgot to write it down.
A Charlie horse. You got a Charlie horse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he gets the first real laugh and then she gets a little chuckle when she gets the cheese dip. But yeah. Oh, I took so many bows tonight. My hip got a Charlie horse.
Yes. And that was the very first recorded I Love Lucy laugh. So that's really awesome.
And we already talked about this, the fact that they had to do every 4 weeks. That just, that would be so stressful to me.
Very stressful. Yeah. And so, of course, the favorite part of this episode is the number of times she throws that book out a window. So when he comes home from, you know, from the club, he goes to kiss her because, I mean, he announces that he's home. He talks about the poster and all of that. And she's so engrossed in the book that no clue that he's even there. So he startles her and out goes the book out the window, which is hilarious.
I do have to say, I have been so engrossed in a book that I've not listened to anyone. I don't think I would have ever been engrossed enough to eat cold cream.
Yeah.
And not notice it. That, you know? Yeah. But I definitely have like tuned people out and not listened at all to what they were saying. So I could get that. And definitely with a murder mystery. Woo.
Oh, yeah.
But yes. Yeah, so this is the first time of many where it just chucks it out the window. And after that, they're in bed and they're kind of just chit chatting. And she's like, it was either the butler or the cook.
How can I go to sleep till I know who killed her? Let's see. It was either the upstairs maid or the butler or the cook.
It was her husband.
Her husband? He didn't have any reason to kill her.
He was married, wasn't he?
Oh.
I can see it all now. He worked very hard all day. Got home about 2 o'clock in the morning. She started pestering him. Wouldn't let him sleep. He stood it as long as he could. He decided to do away with her. So he got out of bed. Looked around for a murder weapon. A gun. Nah, make too much noise. A knife. Uh-huh. Too sloppy. A scar. Uh-huh. Perfect. He would do the job quietly and neatly. Slowly he approaches the bed. Murder in his heart. And then...
I put this in my notes. I was like, the first big problem of this episode happens at like 4 minutes. This is the first really big, you know, like the idea that just being married to someone is enough of a reason. Married to a woman is enough of a reason for the husband to be like, ah, I want to murder
He's
you.
He's had enough. He's going to commit a murder because, you know, wife. So she, I guess the premise of the book that she was reading was probably having to do with a husband or a wife or something like that. But the episode here is of that. And so what's disturbing is during the time that he's saying, well, he was married, so that was enough of a reason to kill her, is he gets up and he starts acting out what he would do with a scarf. You know, how he would pull it off.
Why does he go into so much detail?
I mean, he could have just left it at that and go to sleep. But no, he had to act out how he would, you know, strangle. Again, this is a very dark episode when you really think about, you break it down. So he's got the scarf and he's explaining how he would strangle her, you know, with the scarf. So which then, of course, prompts her to pretend to fall asleep so we can end this murderous conversation.
One, again, why does he go into so much detail? But also, you know, he starts it by saying, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and his wife is pestering him. And I'm like, is he talking about this moment? Because they were having a conversation and you lasted like, because he lasted as long as he could. And I was like, so 2 minutes? You lasted 2 minutes before you got so annoyed that you wanted to kill your wife? Like,
kill. Kill. Think about what you're saying. Murder. Oh my God. Murder. Jeez. So then it cuts to the kitchen because, you know, they go to sleep after the threat of murder. Then it cuts to the kitchen and I guess she goes back to retrieve the book, you know, that had flown out the window. That what?
That she washes it.
Yeah, she washes it in the sink, which
hurts my heart.
Because you're now watering paper. So then Ethel is visiting and she ignores her the way she ignored Ricky when he first walked in. And we have the second throwing of the book when she startles her.
Yeah, she's like, did I startle you? And Lucy goes, no, I was just getting ready to scream and throw it out the window anyways.
Yeah. No wonder it's called The Mockingbird Murder Mystery. It keeps flying out windows.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's where that quote comes in.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, Ethel's super excited to talk about how she has started to learn how to read fortunes. And this, I just want to throw out, there's a little bit of an inconsistency here because Lucy says she doesn't believe in this stuff at all. Mm-hmm. And a few weeks later in the seance, which is season one, episode 7, Lucy believes in that and lots of other stuff.
So she really does believe in numerology. And, you know, that's where they, she tries to match the numbers with Ricky to see if they're really compatible. So she very much believes in that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. And I also, when Ethel comes in, I don't know if you noticed this, but she's much more dressed up. This is one of the few episodes where she's she kind of looks her age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she also, at this point, it was not determined that she was kind of going to want to eat everything in sight. So I don't know if you noticed this, but when she comes in, there's like a full plate of donuts that she just doesn't touch.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that. Later on in the season, if there's food on the table, she goes straight for it.
The joke, you know, is always Ethel's hungry at all times. Mm-hmm. She's just always hungry. But it's telling that perhaps they said, you know, no, Ethel's a little too dressed up for us. We can't outshine Lucille, you know, so she'll be the frumpy one from here on out and she'll always be eating. So I wonder if that was just, you know, organic. Or something that was thought out, because even though they've dispelled kind of the rumors about her wanting to have Ethel gain weight and look frumpier, they've said, no, that's not true. But, you know, as you can see, as time goes on, it kind of becomes that way.
Yeah. And okay, so there's another quote that I want to read, if that's all right. It's from Maury Thompson, mm-hmm. who's the script clerk. And she said, you know, right from the first day of rehearsal, everyone knew that this was going to be serious work. Bill and Vivian, Mark and Emily, Daniels, Bob and Madeline. Jess mm-hmm. and I were there. Yeah, Mark and Emily had brought Vivian with them. And Desi came in. Lucy arrived after everyone was seated at the read-through table. And her hair was up in a babushka. She wore no makeup. She certainly didn't look like a movie star to me. And she said, Desi introduced Vivian to Lucy. And she said, hi, what part are you reading for? And Vivian was not made to feel at ease. And then Lucy started in, you look just like me. Your hair's the same color as mine. You don't look like a landlady. You aren't right for this part. You aren't dumpy. You're an attractive woman. So Desi asked her what she had in mind for the part. And Lucy answered, I want an old ragged bathrobe and fuzzy slippers with peroxide blonde hair and curlers.
Oh my
God.
That's
what I want her to look like. Vivian looked her right in the eye and said, you've got her. You should see me every morning. I look just like that. And Lucille chuckled and began to look at Viv in a different light. So, you know, and I think we have touched on this, the fact that, you know, Vivian was a very attractive woman. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you were right, the rumors were dispelled that like she wanted her to gain weight and stuff, but it was very true that Lucy was expecting a different role from Vivian, and when they cast her, she was like, she's too young, she's too attractive. Mm-hmm. She wanted someone more along the age of William Frawley.
Right. Well, yes, because you're matching her with William Frawley. And I think with the counterpart they had, was B. Bernadette for the radio show they were doing. It was a much older, frumpier woman. I think that's who they wanted initially for the Ethel role. But nonetheless, it went to her. And of course, we see her kind of downgrade her wardrobe, become more of a, you know, Fred's wife, and more perfectly fit into that role that she was, you know, meant to have.
Yes. Yeah. So after she says, you know, she reads the cards and the Queen of Heart is next to the Ace of Spades.
Mm-hmm. Which is death. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Oh, Lucy, forget that book. I had the most exciting time last night. I learned how to tell fortunes with playing cards. Come on in, I'll tell your fortune. Look, Ethel, we just rent this apartment from you. It doesn't say anything in the lease about having to have our fortune told. Besides, I don't believe in that silly stuff.
Oh, but this system never fails. It's just fantastic, the stuff we learned last night.
Well, maybe the cards will...
Now we have here.
Wait a minute, Ethel. What's wrong with these cards?
Oh, look. Let's forget the fortune telling. You're right. There's nothing to it.
Yeah, I know there's nothing to it, but I want to know what it is. There's nothing to it.
Well, this is your card, the Queen of Hearts. That's you.
Yeah.
And this card right next to it is the Ace of Spades.
What does that mean?
Death.
Death?
What's it doing so close to me? That's just it. Your card is next to the Ace of Spades. That means you're going to be dead.
Dead? Like in as a doornail?
Oh, what's the matter with me? I don't believe in fortune telling. I don't either.
Well, what are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at fortune telling because it's so silly. Do you know anyone who would like to kill you?
No.
Well, then you can see there's...
Wait a minute. Last night I thought Ricky was going to.
Ricky?
Yeah. Oh, but he was just kidding. I think.
Imagine that in flashback to the night before and Ricky's acting out with the scarf and everything. And meanwhile, Ethel's like, someone wants to kill you. But cut to the living room area. Well, first she's startled at the idea that these cards have determined someone wants to kill her. And, you know, so she's freaked out about that. And she's saying, oh, what am I thinking? I don't believe in this anyway. And then Ethel has like this uncomfortable, you know, that's so fake. Yeah. Like, it's no big deal. Like, yeah. And her face just freezes in fear. Yes. So Jerry calls, because Jerry always calls to yes. kind of set up what's going to happen.
So while I think of it, you know, your budget can't afford all those dogs and a girl singer. Now, what are you going to do about Marilyn?
Oh, I didn't tell you, huh? Well, I've been wondering what to do about it for a long time. I finally made up my mind. I'm going to get rid of her. Yeah, she's been with me a long time, Jerry, and that's the trouble. She's been with me too long. After all, the same face, night after night. It's pretty tiresome. A couple of weeks, I'll get another one, and she'll be just as good. Maybe even better.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. A girl singer isn't the most important thing in the world. Oh, before I forget, did you pick up that trick gadget for the Western number?
The gun? Yeah, I got it right here in my desk drawer.
Well, that's a good deal. Oh.
Huh? Ricky just tried to kill me.
Really?
Then I'm a better fortune teller than I thought. What am I saying? What are you talking about?
I overheard him on the phone. He's been planning this a long time, and he finally decided to do it. Last night was just a dress rehearsal.
Oh, no, Lucy, you must have misunderstood him.
No, I didn't. He took a shot at me already, but he missed.
They need to get rid of the singer, right? Oh, no. This is for the dog. The dog act.
Yeah, he says he's got the dog act. Mm-hmm. And Mary, Helen, Cynthia, Alice, and Theodore.
Theodore. Which is kind of risky the way they presented the surprise of the name Theodore, because you and I, or anybody listening in 2021, it's like we can easily just make a gay joke if we wanted to, and we'll, you know, move on, like, or it wouldn't even be a joke. It'll just be an option. And so in 1950s TV, you kind of have to extract the look that they have on their face. What are they trying to say when they say the name Theodore after naming all these women?
A little goof when he's taking the phone call and he's sitting at the desk, you can see a glimpse of the camera and lighting equipment on the right side of the frame. So that's just a fun goof.
Like, yeah. Sometimes you'll see a peek of the bedroom behind them.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That they, you see that when they're dancing. And there's also a sponsor catch. I don't know if you noticed this, but
I did
in the drawer a little bit later. You see the Philip Morris logo very clearly on the carton.
Which later on, of course, they made it more obvious. This was just kind of like a sneak little, you know, peek of the name brand. But later on, they full on said Philip Morris and started smoking like it was no big deal. So it was, it was quick, but noticeable.
Yeah. Okay. So after this, you know, you get, he says bye. First of all, I know that they're playing up to this idea, but like, he comes at her with both of his hands out.
Yes.
And I would be, I was like, if my husband came at me like that, I'd be like, what are you doing?
It was very zombie-like, you know? Very
almost looked to be like they set him up to look like he was going to strangle her, you know, like, you know,
I think it would have been more believable and more natural if, like, let's say she's sitting on the couch and he comes behind her to kind of like hug her. And then it's like, oh, why is your hand next? But the way he walked towards her was very zombie like, which is funny. But, you know, during this whole thing, what kind of, you know, like I said, I have so many questions is, everyone, Lucy and Ethel, are both okay or almost accepting of the idea of being potentially killed.
Oh yeah, she's like, I still love him. Like, I'm gonna try to talk him out of it.
Talk
I
him
still
out of
love
it.
Him.
Yes.
Yeah.
She just accepts it. It's very odd.
Yeah. So this is where we have, I think that comes up in their second conversation where she's got her bulletproof vest on over it's her stomach pan. And her butt.
Mike, oh, that's right. I forgot about the butt one. You're right.
What's the matter with you? You got an itch or something?
No, nothing's the matter with me. What's new?
What's new?
I can't go on. I give up. Go ahead, shoot. Too big for the garbage disposal.
Lucy, for goodness sake. Honey. Lucy, what's the matter with you,
nothing,
honey?
And there isn't going to be either.
Honey. Lucy. Come on here, honey. Come on. What's the matter with you?
Go away.
Open the door, honey. Come on, honey. Open the door.
And so here's another few times where you kind of get a few goofs. I think at, you know, when Ricky does come in, it's 14 minutes, 28 seconds. You can see the pan sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, you can see it when they go into the living room and he doesn't notice it or acknowledge it until it falls on the floor, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
But also when Ricky denies that he's going to shoot or strangle her, Lucy glances back at the sink and says, you know, fortunately I'm too big for the garbage disposal. And I don't know if you knew this, but in-sink garbage disposals were super common in California homes, but they were prohibited by law in New York City.
Yes,
it was just to protect the sewage system, and the ban was lifted in 1977. So
yeah, it's it was a very California thing to say when it's supposed to take place in New York during that time.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what I love is the part where, you know, she says, every time I think of it, I get a sinking feeling here. And then, you know, she taps the pan she has in her stomach. And then Ethel goes, you have a sinking feeling where? And that's when, you know, we all get introduced to the pan that she's carrying around, which again goes to the notion, because she's explaining to Ethel that she wants to be a moving target for this potential gunshot she's about to receive. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just accepting of it. You know, she's like, a moving target is hard to hit. And Ethel's just like going along with it. Yeah, your husband's trying to murder you. It sounds about right.
That's fine. Yeah. Okay. Let's
maybe you can talk him out of it. Maybe
what's new?
Yeah, maybe we can change his mind. What? Very odd.
She runs into her bedroom and locks herself in, and this is where Fred comes in, right? And he has that famous line, you know, crazy for Lucy
or crazy
for anyone or for crazy for Lucy. Yeah. He goes, okay, no, it's crazy for Lucy. And again, the idea that to control your wife, You just slip her some sleeping powder.
The same thing I do with Ethel when she gets upset.
What's that?
Slip her a Mickey.
A Mickey?
Well, not really a Mickey, unfortunately. Just a mild sedative. Here, I've got one. Here, wait. Just drop that in a glass of soda water and she'll never know the difference.
Well, it's not a bad idea, but I don't know.
Now, that'll put her to sleep for the rest of the night. You go on down to the club. I'll look in from time to time and see that she's all right.
Lucy!
Well, all right. Let's dance. To me.
What are you talking about?
I switched glasses.
I know you did. I switched them back.
You mean I got the one with the...
You certainly did.
Ricky, come here. I want to talk to you. Ricky, no matter what you've done, I forgive you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Boy, that certainly did the trick.
Okay,
even if we're not thinking about the fact that they call it a Mickey and he goes, unfortunately, it's not a Mickey. That hurt my heart. I was like, you really had to say, unfortunately, it's not a Mickey?
So a Mickey or Mickey Finn refers to spiking someone's drink with a drug. Okay, we have names for that. It is most likely named after the bartender of the Lone Star Saloon in Chicago. In December 1903, newspapers reported that Michael Mickey Finn was accused of using knockout drops, okay, to incapacitate and rob his customers. The first known example of the term being used is in 1915, which was 12 years after his trial. Again, the idea that unfortunately, it's not a Mickey. Unfortunately, we're not incapacitating her to where she loses consciousness and we're not, you know, she can't move. It's really sad.
That whole idea that that seemed so commonplace. Yeah, I do this with Ethel all the time. So, you know, your wife gets a little hysterical and all right, we're just going to put her out. We're going to put her to sleep. Like, all right.
Yeah, it's kind of like when, you know, if parents had too much with a toddler running around, just give them some nighttime Tylenol or some NyQuil or something. That's not how you parent. And that's not how you husband.
And,
you know, spiking someone's drink, it's crazy. But instead, it's just sleeping powder.
Right.
Again, and, still creepy.
So you see him put it in. But if you watch really closely while they're switching glasses, Ricky actually ends up with the glass containing the sleeping pill,
mm-hmm, right?
Sleeping powder, which mm-hmm. I think is funny.
Now the part my mind can't wrap around because I've seen that scene so many times. I understand that the way that the you know, glasses come around, Ricky ends up with it. But the first time that he goes to rearrange them after she did, how did he know she did that? Because he wasn't facing her. He wasn't looking. It didn't do, it didn't make a splashing sound.
Yeah, I just feel like, so, you know, you see how she's going for the right one, you know, the one that doesn't have the sleeping powder in when she first starts to take it.
Right.
You know, I think he knows his wife pretty well.
Yeah, he just assumed that she was going to do
and
that.
Like, I just feel like he would, you know, asking to dance, yeah, just randomly like that. And then all of a sudden, okay, let's drink. Like, you know, you think, okay, probably something's going on.
Okay.
That's just my guess, though. I don't know.
Yeah, because I kept watching it to see, did he peek over and see her? No, he didn't. She just assumed that she, you know, she moved them. But that's not the point. So after that, then Ethel, you know, she drinks the drink because Ricky says, you actually drank the one with the sleeping powder in it.
Switched it back.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. So, and she ends up then, you know, dramatically falling to her death. Essentially,
it's so dramatic.
It's so dramatic.
She wakes up. She's like, "I forgive you." And then falls again.
Thank you. He says, thank you. Right. And then she goes back down.
Thank you.
And she says, wow, those are strong sleeping pills and or sleeping powder. And she says, the sleep from which no one returns, which is a play on a Shakespearean line of some sort, I think from Hamlet or something. But it's essentially saying death. So then she pretends to knock out because I don't think it was that quick.
No, there's no way, because Ethel comes in and what puts a sheet over her, which again. Like, you just come in and see your wife, your best friend supposedly dead, and you're like, all right, well, he did it.
You're accepting it. You're not freaking out, because me, I would have, you know, the whole building would wake up with my screaming and the commotion I would, you know, no doubt cause.
Right. But she's trying to wake her up or like see if she's really dead.
Yeah, no, she's like, well, I guess he did it.
Also, I know we'll talk about this later. It's definitely a later episode, but there's this whole episode where Ricky throws a book at Lucy. Do you remember this?
Yes. Like
reading a book.
With a black eye?
She gets a black eye, and Ethel and Fred are like overly protective, and they don't believe what happened. Definitely Ethel, and you see her play more of a stereotypical, you know, if I got a black eye and my friend was like, you know, how'd that happen? I heard you fighting, you know, like,
yeah.
But there's none of that in this episode.
No, she just accepts it.
Okay, she's dead.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, well, so she just takes it upon herself to be a coroner and, you know, put a sheet over her and just, well, that's the end of that, I guess. And, you know, she wakes up and startles her, and they both yell, but goodness, it's too accepting of what it was.
It really is. And so we get to the end where Lucy's like, all right, well, I'm gonna go down and confront him. Well, I still can, you know. And so they head down to the club. Another little goof, if you listen really closely, when the trainer, or is that the trainer? When the trainer's calling the dogs, he calls one of them Yorkie instead of their
acting name.
Because that's, because that's what their name was. And then when Lucy yawns, Ethel yawns, and that's something that wasn't scripted for her, for Ethel to yawn.
Yeah, because she technically does have the sleeping powder in her system, so she still has to eventually fall asleep from that.
Yes. So I just, you know, so we get to the end, and it all laughs off where he's like, haha, you know, these are the people. I was getting rid of my, the girl who's the dancer, and then, you know, he puts out the gun and it says bang, you know, and it's all laughed off. And, you know, this definitely, we talked about this, you know, I like this episode, but I also take it, you know, for what it is, which is a dark episode where there's lots of, you know, and I read a review or an article where basically the woman was like slamming this episode. She's like, it's really dark. You know, how the article title was, we need to talk about how this disturbing I Love Lucy. We need to talk about this disturbing I Love Lucy episode. And just how, you know, slipping Lucy a drug's really quite deplorable, you know, and the whole idea that the murder is, it's fine because they're married, you know, and we talked about all of that, but that's, you know, there are other people that also share those feelings about this episode.
Well, see, we're looking at it and listening to it with 2020s eyes and ears. And
oh yeah, it would never be able to be
No, everybody would be canceled on that show, literally and figuratively. But I think 1950s, 60s, and I mean, I've seen even some John Wayne films, just, you know, on a side note, where it's acceptable to just slap a woman to kind of get her to behave. I mean, because I remember seeing, my husband watches, you know, John Wayne films, and to kind of get her senses back to stop behaving kind of crazy, he just slaps her. And now John Wayne's a big guy, and she's kind of like, oh, you're right, I don't know what happened to me, I'm back to normal now from the slap. And it's like, did anybody else see that, or am I picturing something crazy? But it's acceptable,
that whole idea that women are, you know, theirs to control, and really it's their job to control these women, you know. And you think about how I said, you know, they were having a conversation, and granted, it was late and he was trying to go to sleep, but like, they were talking.
Yeah.
It wasn't like she just randomly woke him up and started talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it begs to question, you know, like, wow, how you never know when you've talked too much, you know, like as a woman at that time, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think continuing the conversation gonna be the basis for
we missed the sinister. Part where she assumed it was for her. Was because, you know, he needed to replace a dancer, Marilyn, and he, you know, she overheard his phone conversation, which he was saying, I'm tired of the same face night after night, you know, and so, you know, I'll miss her, but in some sort of time, I'll have someone else.
Another one.
Yeah. And so that was the premise of her initial thinking, that it was for her, that he's replacing her with another woman by murdering her, by the way, no jail time. He'll just move on to another woman. And yeah. He's got a list of women that he's going to choose from. And Theodore, you know,
So, and Theodore.
So it's a lot you have to accept in 2021, watching it with these eyes. You know, I mean, I'm used to it. You're used to it. Lucy fans and you know, people who know of this show are used to the language and the script. But if you were to just present it to a Gen Z person or a millennial, maybe you'd be a lot more sensitive, and it would be all over Twitter. Cancel this show. Look how they treat women.
And like we said, it's just a period of the time. There's an Andy Griffith show quite early on in the season where Ellie, who's just the lady druggist there, decides to run for city council, to be a city councilwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a whole uproar. Even Andy, who, you know, is thought to be really open about things like that, is like, no, that's funny. You shouldn't be. It's city councilman.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and the only thing that brings him back to his sensibilities is Opie, you know, who's teeny in this episode,
mm-hmm.
basically spewing out, yeah, we showed her, like, we're not going to let women tell us what to do. Like, that's not who, you know, and Andy hears it and is like appalled by what he hears. Right. But like, mm-hmm. that's the only reason, you know, he changed his mind. And the, you know.
Well, much like the Lucy episodes where the women go into business, the whole premise is mocking the idea, the very idea that Lucy and Ethel can run a business, not based on education, not based on, you know, business background or any of that, or financial education, just because they're women. And so when they bring up the idea that they're going to run a business, it's literally laughed at.
Right. And you've got to wonder, you know, how much of this was I know this is the period of the time, but I'm guessing they pulled off of just things that Lucy went through, being, you know, a businesswoman,
mm-hmm.
you know, yes. running this. Because
right.
just think about how much she had to go through. And I'm guessing, you know, probably someone, people laughed at her.
Oh, goodness.
You know,
the yes.
idea of her, you mm-hmm. know, being this lead and owning, you know, at some point owning Desilu Productions, like just so many things that a woman shouldn't or, you know, isn't able to do. And she was doing it all, you know.
Well, she was very much in a man's category, which is the physical comedy that was very much run by, you know, the Buster Keatons of the world, the men. You know, it was very unusual to see a woman try and do what she did, which is the physical comedy, slapstick comedy, you know, the caricature that she became, because usually women were they were the damsels in distress. They were dressed up and the men came to rescue, which, you know, worked for that time. But Lucy broke so many barriers because she, you know, she was the powerhouse that she became just based on her hard work, her ethic and all of that. You know, she kind of cut all those stereotypes out, being the first female owner of a studio like that.
Right. And I'm so glad she did. Really, honestly, she was such a trailblazer. And we talked about that before, but just the thought of how much she had to go through. I mean, even thinking about being a woman now, mm-hmm. you know, there's still inequalities and being a woman now and
yeah, sure.
and gaining power and things like that. But at that time, you know, being in such a position, it wasn't unheard of, obviously, but it was definitely very rare and very hard to come by. So,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people, you know, you read about Lucille Ball and then they talk about how not controlled, but she did like things a certain way. And she
oh, yes.
was very...
a perfectionist.
She was a perfectionist. She was get things done. And I wonder how much of that had to be, you know, because she was doing things that, you know, men should be doing, you know, where, you know, they thought men should be doing. And so she had very little space for error, if you know
you're,
what I mean. You know,
you're
she,
right.
she could not make a mistake. And so she had even more pressure to be a perfectionist and to be for everything to be perfect. And so that I think kind of pushed her to be more of this needs to be done this way and things like that, you know?
Yeah, she was very much in control of everything. And I think to your point, if a man was in charge of the studio, the taping, all of that, it would just come off as assertive, as strong, as a leader. But mm-hmm. when Lucille did it, I've seen a lot of, you know, backstage recordings of her asking, why is the light there like that? Why is that back there? Why, you know, she's
just running the stage.
She was just running the stage. Yeah. But when people described her, they would describe her kind of bitchy, kind of hard-headed. And it's like, no, she was doing what the men were doing around her, but you were just not used to that.
Yeah,
in the
1950s. Doing her job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she did it well. But so this was very unusual to kind of have to suspend reality in your mind that we just accept a husband wanting to kill his wife and her trying to convince him otherwise. One last. And another thing I think we didn't mention, she runs into the club with this gun that's a prop, right?
Yeah.
And no one panics. Like, she came in there like with a stick 'em up kind of pose and puts it in his, you know, abdomen.
Yeah.
Like oh, just another crazy dame. I mean, what? Is no one panicking? I know it's a television show, but I'm just,
you know, I
that's
just
what we're doing.
Part of me has to wonder, like, how many times randomly run in there?
Like, yeah, that they're just used to it. Yeah,
they're like, oh, it's all right, it's just Lucy
with a gun, because they don't know if it's fake or not. I mean, I don't know.
Oh man. Yeah. All right, well, that is the episode
where
we reached the end. It was a good episode.
It was.
I think, you know, you do have to suspend some disbelief. You kind of have to just watch it for what it is. And remember that it's a time period. It's a period, you know,
period
a show
piece.
Of its
yeah.
time. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really just appreciate it for in that aspect. But I do like this episode. There's a lot to talk about. So I had a really fun time.
Yeah, this one was fun. I like this one. So hopefully from here on, they're not as dark. But if they are, we'll pick it apart.
We'll definitely talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone. Find us on all the social medias under Having a Ball Pod or Podcast. And we'll look forward to it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.